Marcus. Very grateful for all the devotees for coming this evening. For our festival. In remembrance and celebration of Sri Balaramji's Rasa Leela in Vrindavan. It is also Krishna's day of his Vasant Ras, his Ras Leela in the spring season at Govardhan. Also the appearance day of Shamananda Goswami, and the appearance of Hanuman. Which subject would you like to hear? With the little time we have, I'll try to speak briefly on a couple of these most auspicious subjects. While Krishna Balaram were residing in Dwarka, Sri Balaramji was remembering the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the sweet and loving friendships he had with the gopas, his friends, the supremely affectionate love he received from Yashoda and Nanda, the relationships with the cows. And he began to remember the beautiful activities or pastimes between Krishna and the gopas and the gopis. He was feeling within his heart the deep pangs of separation that they must be experiencing. So he decided to go alone to Vrindavan to try to pacify the separation of the devotees there, the Brijabasis, as well as experience the supreme enjoyment of their association. One may ask why Krishna didn't go. Krishna wanted to go, but the Yadus, his mother, Devaki, Father Vasudev, his queens, his friends, they would not allow him to go. And Krishna is very much captured by the love of his devotees. So they said to Krishna when they saw his inclination that if you go, there is no doubt that the loving dealings of the gopas and the gopis of Vrindavan are so sweet, they are so supremely enjoyable to you, they've sacrificed everything for you. And after you've been away from them for so long, if you go back, they'll never let you leave them again. And you won't be able to leave them. You'll be captivated. You'll be enchanted. You'll be captured by their love and we'll never see you again and we won't be able to live, so you must stay here. You cannot go. Krishna, he revealed at another time that every day he would go to Vrindavan, into the hearts of the gopas and the gopis. And although they did not see him physically with their eyes, in their deep separation from him, they were experiencing him in total absorption. the love, his love, they were feeling, and the love that they were offering him was unparalleled in all material or spiritual worlds. So in these feelings of separation, Krishna was giving the residents of Vrindavan the highest ecstasies, and he was feeling the highest ecstasies within their hearts. And he knew if he went, if he didn't go back to the Yadus, they would die. And if he went to Vrindavan and left again, they would die. But just the promise that Krishna made that he would return was keeping them alive. And his entering their hearts and performing his loving pastimes with them was nourishing them infinitely with spiritual love. So Balaram boarded his chariot and went to Sri Vrindavan. When he arrived, how happy the Brijabasis were. After so long time, Sri Balaramji had returned. Nanda and Yashoda, even though now Balaram was a great prince in Dwarka, it was many years since he left Vrindavan as a little 10-and-a-half-year-old boy with Krishna to go to fight with Kamsa. And but still they saw him as their little Balaram. They put him on their laps, and they embraced him, and they kissed him, and they stroked him. And they asked many questions. How is your health? How are you? How are all the inhabitants of the Yadu dynasty? They must be living much, very happy since that vicious king Kamsa has been killed. And now, from Mathura, you all moved to Dwarka in the sea, surrounded by walls. Must be very protected. You must be very happy there. Please tell us. And they were asking about different individuals, and Balaram was answering. And the gopas, Balaramji, he greeted everyone according to their position. To the senior cowherd men and cowherd ladies, he offered his obeisances, and with folded palms, he greeted them. To his friends, he embraced them, he joked with them, he spoke all friendly words. To those who were junior to him, they offered obeisances to him, and he gave blessings. The Brijabasis, they offered him a nice seat, they offered him nice prasad, nice sitting place, and he took rest. And the gopis. Balaram saw the gopis looking at him from a little distance. And he went a little away from the others and met with the gopis. Krishna's gopis. They inquired, "Does Krishna ever remember us? Does he remember Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai, who gave their hearts, their souls, their everything only for him? Does he ever remember Vrindavan, Govardhan, Yamuna, the beautiful trees of Kadamba and Tamal trees? Does he remember us, the gopis? When he played on his flute and he called for us, we abandoned everything for him. We abandoned our fathers, our mothers, our husbands, our brothers, our sisters, our home, our wealth, our prestige. We abandoned everything only for his pleasure. And then he abandoned us. to go to a foreign land. But all we could do is think of him, thinking of his beautiful smiles, his wonderful gestures, his dancing, his sweet words. Another gopi said, "Why are we always thinking of him? He doesn't think of us, so why should we think of him?" And another gopi said, "He may not think of us, but we can't stop thinking of him." We gopis are very different people. We're not ordinary. Because if any girl loves a boy as much as we love Krishna, then in separation, they would die. They would not be able to maintain their lives. Impossible. Neither the loved or the beloved could possibly tolerate such separation. They have to die. But we gopis, we're in that ocean of separation, and yet we live. This is the fate that destiny has written on our foreheads. They were inquiring about Krishna in every way, especially wondering, now that he's with these very sophisticated city ladies, he must not remember us at all. But those poor ladies, they don't know how his sweet words and enchanting smiles will capture their hearts, and then he may leave them also. Thinking of Krishna in every way, how they would make garlands for Krishna, how they would pick flowers for Krishna, they would cook for Krishna, they would dance for Krishna, they would dress for Krishna, they would live for Krishna. Thinking of every little detail of what it was like when Krishna was with them. And actually, in their hearts, all day, every day, they would simply wait for Krishna to come. Krishna promised he would come. He will come. That kept them alive. And from the earliest time in the morning, they would make garlands. They would make wonderful, sweet preparations, all that Krishna liked. They would dress themselves, everything, either physically or in their heart of hearts, with the hope that Krishna would come that day. But when the sun would set, they would simply cry all night long. And the next day, in their heart of hearts, they were performing their leelas for Krishna, performing their services for Krishna, simple services, in their meditation, all the while crying and crying. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains how, from the day that Lord Krishna left Sri Vrindavan Dham, the gopis cried the rest of their lives. Now, for many of us, ordinary person, if you lose a loved one, time heals a broken heart. But for the gopis, time was only like fuel poured upon the fire of their separation. Because on the spiritual platform of gopi bhava, their love is ever increasing. Their separation, the pangs were ever increasing with every moment. The gopis cried. They couldn't control themselves. Even in front of Balaram, who was Krishna's elder brother, who the gopis in general would be very restrained and respectful toward, seeing him and remembering Krishna so intimately, they cried and they cried. And Balaramji, he felt so deeply in his heart for them. previously when Uddhava saw this, he was sent to from Mathura with a message from Krishna to gopis. He saw the same experience of the gopis' love and separation. And Uddhava, who was Krishna's foremost friend in the entire Yadu dynasty, practically his constant companion, it's not that he felt sorry for the gopis. Most of us will think that why would Krishna put them in such separation? They're crying. They seem to be suffering. But Uddhava is a connoisseur of rasas, of divine love. He saw this crying and separation and understood it to be the highest expression and the deepest ecstasy of love, prema bhakti. Uddhava was thinking, I have no relationship with Krishna compared to them. There is no love in my heart when I put myself before the gopis. They're consumed in that fire of love. They can't think of anything or anyone else except Krishna, and it's ever increasing. And even though physically Krishna is so far away, in their hearts, not a moment passes when they are not rendering most intimate services to Krishna. Perfection of samadhi. Samadhi means complete absorption. The impersonal samadhi is to be completely absorbed always in Brahman. But the gopis were far, far, far beyond that. 24 hours a day for all eternity. The gopis, their very souls are immersed in the shoreless, bottomless ocean of intimate remembrance of Shamsundar, Gopinath. And they're making their garlands for him, and they're cooking for him, and they're dressing for him, and they're smiling for him, and they're dancing for him. This is nothing of this world. Uddhava, upon seeing this, he wanted to take the dust of the gopis' feet. But being a great prince from the regal city of Dwarka, to take the dust from the feet of simple gopis would embarrass them too much. So he prayed. He performed tapasya, to be a little creeper, just one little creeper. In the vast land of Vrindavan, he just wanted to be one little creeper in the ground with the hope that the gopis would step on his head with their lotus feet. And actually, Uddhava, in his perfected form, is eternally living in Vrindavan as that creeper, just waiting for the gopis to cast the dust of their feet on his head without even knowing that he's there. To be such an important associate of Krishna and Dwarka, what a humble position. Being a little creeper, one little creeper in the vast pastures of Braj near Govardhan. Nobody knows he's there. He's completely 100% totally unknown. He's just, to the Brijabasis and the cows and everyone else, he's just another piece of grass. Trinadapi Sunichena. He was literally more humble than a blade of grass. He was a blade of grass. by his own choice. He chose that over being a prince of Dwarka, Krishna's best friend. That is how much he honored the love of Goloka Vrindavan, the love of the Brijabasis. So Balaramji is seeing the gopis crying in their absorption of love for Krishna, the ultimate samadhi. And he meditated on Krishna. And he brought Krishna into his mind to pacify the gopis. Before he left, Krishna gave messages for the gopis to Balaram. But now that Sri Balaramji was in his heart of hearts meditating on Krishna and bringing Krishna to personally manifest within his heart and within his mind, he spoke those messages. And it was just as Krishna was speaking the messages personally to the gopis, and they could feel that. In every word Balaram spoke, they could hear Krishna's voice. They could feel Krishna's love so intimately. They were pacified. We speak about Balaram as the original guru, the servant of Godhead who's always facilitating the loving relationships between the Lord and his devotees. He especially went to Vrindavan for that purpose. He remained in Vrindavan for 2 months, the months of Madhu and Madhava. And there were a set of gopis that were his own gopis. They were younger than the gopis that Krishna performed the Ras Lila with at Bamsivat. With those gopis, he performed his Rasa Lila at a place called Sri Ram Ghat, which is quite a distance from the Bamsivat in Vrindavan, on bank of Yamuna. And there, Lord Balaramji, he sang, he danced. Our acharyas explain, when Krishna Balaram were living in Vrindavan, near Govardhan, once Balaram was with his gopis and Krishna was with his gopis, and Shankachuda came to steal the gopis away from Krishna because they were so beautiful. And he was very close to Kuvera, who is treasurer of the demigods. So he was very wealthy. And he had a magnificent jewel that he kept on his head. And because he was so wealthy and so handsome and so strong and so learned, he couldn't tolerate anyone having something that he wanted. This is the mentality. When we become proud, we think that we deserve. And when we think we deserve so much of what we want, we naturally become envious. And when you become very powerful and people listen to you, it becomes intolerable when you don't get your way. If you never get your way and nobody really cares what you say, it doesn't hurt that much. But the more you have, the more your ego needs, it feeds on this control. So Shankashuda couldn't imagine, no one can enjoy these ladies except me. So with a stick, he took the gopis away. And they were crying, Krishna, Balaram, Krishna, Balaram. Balaram. Krishna told Balaram, you take care of gopis, I'll take care of him. And he did. He ran after him, and Shankarshuda then left the gopis and ran away. Krishna punched him. And that was the end of Shankarachuda. And then he took away his jewel and presented it to Balaram. So Balaramji, he was laughing, he was dancing, exchanging pure spiritual loving relationships at Sri Ramghat. And then Varuna, the lord of the sea, he sent his daughter Varuni to take the form of a highly celestial beverage. The fragrance of this beverage was so enticing, and the effect of drinking this delicious beverage would intoxicate one's mind. But it's not like the intoxications that people take in Mumbai. This is Varuni. This is a divine experience. So Balaramji, he smelled from the hollow of a tree, a kadamba tree, this Varuni beverage. And he said to gopis, let us search out the source of this fragrance. And when they came close to the tree, Varuni, she called out, the nectar called out, "Oh Balaram, my father, Balaram, my father, my other father, Varuna, sent me just for you to enjoy." So from what we read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, it appears that Varuni is something like a divine beverage that's something like honey, but beyond honey, by millions and millions of times. Balaram began to drink it, began to feed it to gopis. And soon Balaram, his eyes were rolling in ecstasy of intoxication. And then he and the gopis were really laughing and really dancing. Balaramji was dressed in blue garments. His beautiful white complexion was perspiring. And the Srimad Bhagavatam explains the beads of perspiration on his beautiful white complexion looked like snowflakes. His large lotus-like eyes. He had one earring, beautiful, as he danced with gopis. Then he looked toward River Yamuna and he cried out, "Yamuna, come here. We want to swim and have our water sports in you." Now, this is usually you go to the river. This is the common tradition, is you go to the river. It's not that you demand the river come to you. So perhaps Yamuna Devi never heard such a request before. So seeing Balaram with his eyes rolling and laughing like this, she was thinking, he's very intoxicated. So she didn't come. But Balaramji wanted to show the world that we should not underestimate the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He became transcendentally angry. "Oh, wretched river, you dare to defy my order? Today I will bring you here by my own powers with the tip of my plow, and I will cut you into hundreds and hundreds of streams.
Then he took his plow and he hit it into Yamuna and began to pull her. When Yamuna Devi saw in a personified form of Kalindi, she stood before Balaram with folded palms, eyes glazed with love and surrender. And she said, "Oh, mighty arm, Balaram, who could possibly understand the magnitude of your power and strength? The entire universe and all the universes in creation are resting upon just a small portion of your energy. Please, please forgive me. I did not understand your powers. I was negligent. But now, she was inspired by hearing about the gopis crying. I'm not going to make any purport on that. Yamuna Devi, she cried out like this, "Now I surrender to you. I am your devotee. And you are always kind to protect your devotees. Please accept me." So Balaram was very satisfied. She surrendered her life. Actually, Yamuna is the divine river that descended from the spiritual world. Yamuna eternally flows in Goloka Vrindavan, the highest realm of Vaikuntha, to facilitate the most sweet, loving pastimes of Radha, Krishna, the Gopas, the Gopis, Balaram. And when Krishna descends into this world, he brings Yamuna, he brings Govardhan, he brings the forest and the Kalpavriksha trees of Braja, he brings the spiritual world, he brings his eternal associates, Sarabi cows, the Nityasiddha devotees, and he also allows pure devotees who have just perfected their lives from the material world to enter into those pastimes, to be trained by the Nityasiddha devotees so that they too could return to Goloka at the end of his lila in this world. Yamuna Devi, as Balaram and gopis sang and played within her waters, she was just the temperature, the breeze, everything was just absolutely for the pleasure of the Lord and his devotees. Can you imagine what Yamuna is? An expansion of Srimati Radharani. She's an expansion of Vishakha Devi, the gopi, who is an expansion of Sri Radha. Yamuna Devi is Krishna's pleasure potency. And in the form of this river, she's creating lotus flowers, most fragrant lotus flowers, most beautiful lotus flowers. And the taste of her water, the fragrance of her water, the temperature of her water, the sight of her water, the breeze coming from her water, everything is a full-fledged expression of her intimate love That is Yamuna. So among all the lotus flowers, in the fragrance of the Yamuna River, intoxicated by Varuni, Balaram and gopis enjoyed on this full moon night in the springtime of Vrindavan. Shukadev Goswami says that Balaram was like, it was like Airavata, the great elephant, enjoying with so many she elephants. And then he came out of the river with the gopis, and Goddess Kanti, who's Lakshmi Devi herself, appeared. Beautiful goddess of fortune. And she offered Balaramji a garland of unfading, eternal lotus flowers. And fresh, brilliant blue garments, gold ornaments studded with diamonds and jewels, and a beautiful earring. And for the pleasure of Goddess Kanti, Balaramji accepted those garments and spent that night at Sri Ram Ghat with his beloved gopis. Shukadev Goswami tells that every night for 2 months, Balaramji gave this enjoyment to the gopis. And in doing so, every moment, every night was a completely new experience. Because in the Nitya Lila, although it appears that Krishna may perform the same Lilas again and again in different universes, every time he does it, it's absolutely fresh and new. In fact, for a pure devotee, when a devotee chants the holy name of Krishna, it's not like, well, I've been chanting these, let's see, there is 16 names, 108 times, 16 names in one mantra, 108 mantras in one mala, 16 malas. I've been doing this for 38, 39, 40 years. Because Krishna's lila, Krishna's form, Krishna's abode, Krishna's qualities are all non-different than his name. And when we chant the name of Krishna with love, like the residents of Vrindavan, who are approaching Krishna with prema, then Krishna reciprocates in an ever new, ever fresh experience for both for him and for his devotees. There's in the spiritual world, or in spiritual consciousness, there is absolutely no such thing as being bored. It's not that you have to find something to do just to pass time. Yes, in this world, people are really bored. And they try to consume themselves in all sorts of different kinds of activities just to forget that loneliness, to forget that boredom. But the spiritual, everything is ever fresh. And everyone is always remembering Krishna, and Krishna is non-different than remembering him with love. And even in the mind, Krishna is inducing ever new experiences at every moment. In separation, there's the greatest pang of loneliness, but in that loneliness, there's total companionship with Krishna,
who's drowning us in fathomless oceans of loving pastimes.
That is the spiritual world. So this is how Balaramji and Gopis spent 2 months. And it seemed to them like it wasn't even one night. It passed so quickly. When Krishna performed Rasleela with Gopis in Sarat season, just to please the Gopis who sacrificed everything only for him, by his own Yogeshwar mystic powers, he extended that one night to a night of Brahma, which is a long time. But even though it was a full night of Brahma, for the gopis, it seemed to pass like moments because they were so absorbed beyond time. Spiritual world is where time is conspicuous by its absence. Where everything in this material world, everything is being destroyed. Everything is decreasing. Lifespan. Ayur harati vaipungshu. What is that verse? That with every rising and setting of the sun, one is one day closer to death. Except those who find pleasure in hearing the glories of Lord Krishna. For them, with every rising setting of the sun, one day closer to eternal life. Instead of the sunrises and sunsets diminishing and draining our lifespan, it's actually enriching and nourishing us with eternal life. Because Krishna's Surya Narayan. If we approach Krishna with love and devotion, eager to hear and chant his glories, then in the form of the sun, he will give light not only to your eyes but to your heart and increase your duration of life to eternity. Yayatamam prapadyate. But if you don't find pleasure in hearing and chanting about Krishna, then you have to look for pleasure in other ways. And then that same sun, Krishna's energy, is simply taking away your life. Old age, disease, death, rebirth again and again and again. In Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur, close to the beginning, he tells this beautiful pastime of Balaramji's wonderful Ras Leela on the banks of the Yamuna at Sri Ram Ghat in Vrindavan. Because he wanted to glorify that this same Balaram, who's Krishna himself in the mood of the most intimate servitor of Krishna, has come to this world as Sri Nityananda Prabhu. And just as Balaram to the Brijavasis, they felt that Krishna was again with them. They felt reunited with Krishna through Balaram's love and compassion for them. In a similar but extended way, in this material world, we are all Krishna's devotees and associates, essentially. But we've been away from Krishna so long. Not suffering like the gopas and the gopis, but really suffering in this material existence. But Balaramji comes as Lord Nityananda Prabhu to bring us back to Krishna. We only know about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because of Nityananda Prabhu. How thoroughly, just as Balaram so thoroughly is serving Krishna and his devotees in every way in the spiritual world, Nityananda Prabhu. He ordered Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami to go to Vrindavan. And there, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he gave all credit to Nityananda Prabhu, who originally sent him there, and then to Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, who he heard these leelas and these teachings from. It was Nityananda Prabhu that brought Rupa Sanatan to Mahaprabhu and Ramakeli. It was Nityananda Prabhu that blessed Raghunath Das Goswami to achieve the shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet forever. And these are the people who have given us everything we know about Mahaprabhu. And it is said that the last disciple that Nityananda Prabhu made was Vrindavan Das Thakur, the son of Narayani. And Nityananda Prabhu ordered him to write Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. Not only did he order him to write it, but he appeared in his heart and manifested through him. Vrindavan Das Thakur says again and again, it is not me writing. This is the inspiration. This is the power, the Shakti of Nityananda Prabhu, glorifying Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As Ananta Shesha, with thousands of mouths, he's constantly chanting the names and the glories of the Lord. And beyond Ananta Shesha was Nityananda Prabhu, who provided the whole world the opportunity to connect with Sri Sri Radha and Krishna in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and return to our original natural relationship with the Lord through chanting the holy name. One day, after Sri Ramchandra returned from the forest to Ayodhya, he was sitting in his palace as the king with Bharat, Lakshman, Shatrughna, Sita, Hanuman. And Agastya Muni came to visit him. Now, Agastya Muni was very dear to Lord Ram. He helped him a lot. It was Agastya Muni that was there near Panchavati, yes? Agastya Muni actually gave Ram the mantras, the arrow, which he ultimately killed Ravana with. The blessing of Agastya Muni. So Agastya Muni Ramchandra was asking him many questions about the great personalities of the Ramayana. And at one point, he was telling about Ravana, the history of Ravana, and the history of Bali, and how at one time there was an encounter between Bali and Ravana. And Bali was really powerful. He picked up Ravana and put him under his arm and just took him away. So Ramchandra asked a question to Agastya Muni. That we read about how powerful Ravana was and how powerful Bali was, but even more powerful was Hanuman. The courage, the strength, the intelligence, the devotion, the skills, everything about Hanuman is unsurpassable, unparalleled.
when Bali exiled Sugriva, why didn't Hanuman do anything? Why he just followed Sugriva into exile? Why didn't he fight? He loved Sugriva. He gave his heart and soul to Sugriva. Why didn't he try to help him? He was far more powerful than Bali or anyone. Is it that he forgot his own powers? Can you tell me this story? So Valmiki Muni explains Agastya Muni's reply. There was a great king of the Vanaras. His name is Rikshuraja. Very, very powerful person, effulgent. And he had two sons, Bali and Sugriva. After years, by the power of time, Rikshuraja left this world, and Bali, the elder brother, was made the king. And Bali and Sugriva were best of friends. They were inseparable brothers. They were always there for each other. But then the nature of this world, there was a misunderstanding. I'm not going to go into that story, but there was a demon who came and attacked Kishkinda, and Bali and Sugriva went together. Bali went into the cave and told Sugriva, you wait here, and I'm going to, don't come in, just wait here till I come out. And Sugriva was obedient. Day after day after day after day, they were fighting. Sugriva couldn't go in because it was the order of Bali. Then he heard this hideous roar of a rakshasa sound. Then he saw blood flowing, coming out of the cave. Then there was silence. So he was brokenhearted. His beloved brother Bali was dead. So he put a huge rock in front of the cave so that the demon couldn't get out. And he went back and he told everyone, and he was coronated as king. Material world, he was trying to do some seva. But Bali killed the demon. And Sugriva locked Bali into the cave. Bali was really upset. Why my brother did this? He must have, why in the world would he do this? Because it was not easy removing that rock. Then when he finally gets back, he sees Sugriva sitting on the throne being worshipped. So Sugriva's motivation was to put in sadness, lamenting over Bali's death. He was trying to protect Bali's citizens. But Bali's interpretation was he tried to lock me in so he can exploit and take everything I have. So there was a big fight. And due to the curse of Matanga Rishi, Sugriva found shelter on the Rishyamukha mountain. So he was living there. And Hanuman followed behind him. He was faithful. Why? Why didn't Hanuman join Bali? He was the king. Oh, why didn't he kill Bali? He had the power to do so. Why he just followed exile with Sugriva? So Rama is asking this question and Agastya Muni is answering. Would you like to hear the answer? I'll try. He explained why Hanumanji was forgetful. He begins by talking about the great mountain Sumeru, which by the grace of the sun, it was gold, a golden mountain. And there lived a Keshari Raj, who was a king of a monkey race. And his wife was Anjana, who previously was an apsara. But somehow or other, she inadvertently made fun of the appearance of one sage. And for the sake of the Lord's pastimes, she was cursed to live in the dynasty of monkeys, although she was actually extraordinarily beautiful. Still, she married Keshari Raj. And Agastya Muni, he doesn't go into detail, so I'm going to stay within the line of his storytelling. He explains how Vayu was very, very much attracted by Anjana. And knowing the ultimate will of Lord Sri Ramchandra, the Supreme Lord Vishnu, he impregnated Anjana. And some Puranas described how he carried the seed of Lord Shiva in the form of payasam for her to drink. There are different explanations in different yugas of how Hanumanji was born. One is that, if you remember on Ram Navami, when Rishyashringa performed that yajna, there was that payasam, divine nectar, that was given to the three wives of Dasarath, where Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Satrughna was born from that. Well, one portion was carried away by a bird, a large bird, into the sky. He had a mission. And then Vayu took that right away from the bird and brought it right to Anjana. And she drank it, and Hanumanji was born. Now, having the potencies of Lord Shiva, the potencies of Vayu, he was extraordinary. So one day when he was just a little baby, he was hungry. So he just, little monkey, not little compared to when he grew up, but he was Hanuman. So this little baby monkey, Hanumanji, he wasn't named Hanuman yet. He was Anjana Nandana. So he was just, he went into the forest looking for some food, and it was the early morning, and then he was lonely for his mother, and he started to call out for his mother to feed him, and then the sun was rising on the eastern horizon. And when he saw the beautiful rising sun, that orb of what is the color, like a reddish color of the sun? Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. Hanumanji considered it fruit, a wonderful piece of fruit. Now, if you pick up a piece of fruit from where you're standing in your hand and hold it in front of the sun, the piece of fruit's bigger than the sun, isn't it? So he wasn't thinking in terms of distance. He just saw the sun's about this big when it rises. Yes, that's how big it is to our sight.
So he saw a piece of fruit, and he really wanted that fruit. So he jumped toward that fruit, toward the sun. And the devas were watching him. They could not believe what they were seeing. This little baby is flying. He was flying faster than Vayu, the wind. He was flying faster than Garuda could fly, the bird carrier of Vishnu. He was flying faster than the mind. Toward the sun. And within moments, he was almost there. And Vayu, because he was getting closer and closer and closer to the sun, Vayu went followed right with Hanumanji, and with his cooling winds, he kept Hanuman cool. He protected him from getting burnt. So as Hanumanji was approaching the sun understood, Surya, that this is Ram's servant, and in the future he's going to do very, very great service to Ram. So he was just accepting whatever may be. But it just so happened that that day was meant to be a solar eclipse. So Rahu was charging toward the sun. And he saw somebody else charging toward the sun. This was very disturbing to Rahu. Because, you know, only on certain intervals does he get to swallow the sun. And here comes somebody else trying to swallow the sun. See another Rahu? So Hanuman saw Rahu coming, and Rahu saw Hanuman coming, and little baby Hanuman just grabbed Rahu and just threw him aside. And Rahu is gigantic. He's really a big entity. So he was really disgraced, just being slapped aside by a little baby monkey. So he went to Indra. And Rahu complained to Indra. He said, "You are the king of the heavens. You're in charge of the management and how everything works. And I'm supposed to, it's my allotment to swallow the moon at certain intervals and swallow the sun at certain intervals. And this is my interval. This is the time for me to do an eclipse of the sun. And you're supposed to make sure that all the different department heads and everything is in order and everyone's cooperating." Well, there's another Rahu that's going to take my portion of what I deserve, and you should do something about it. So Indra said, "I will take care of this." So Indra got on his elephant carrier, Airavata. Airavata is really big. He wasn't just born from a she elephant. He was churned out of the ocean of milk. He had four tusks. He's really a big elephant. And he's Indra's elephant. So Indra goes charging towards Surya to, you know, solve the problem. But as he was coming, Rahu felt, you know, that now that Indra's going to take care of Hanuman, I'm going to go swallow the sun. So he separated from Indra, and Rahu started charge toward the sun again. And Hanuman grabbed him. And Rahu, seeing Hanuman coming at him, he turned around and flew away as fast as he could. And Rahu started screaming out, "Indra, Indra, save me, save me, Indra, Indra, save me." And Indra said, "I'm coming to save you, I will save you, I will make short work of this monkey." And Indra started attacking Hanuman, and then Hanuman heard Indra yelling these words, and he turned his eyes away from Rahu, and he saw Airavata to be a really big piece of fruit.
Hanumanji flew toward Airavata to eat him. Thinking he was an oversized mango or something. And Indra had to take this very seriously. Now Hanuman's charging toward him to eat his elephant. So then Indra took his thunderbolt and threw it. And it crashed against Hanumanji's chin. And the little baby monkey fell onto a mountain and rolled down the mountain. Was unconscious. And Vayu came to his son, his baby son, and found that there was no life in him, no consciousness. So he became very disturbed. I mean, this is, for him, this was serious child abuse. Killed my baby. All he wanted to do was eat some fruit. What was his fault? Every baby wants to eat fruit. So Vayu wanted to give a good lesson. You don't treat babies, especially my son, like this. So he's the deva in charge of the air. So he withdrew the air of the universe from both within and without. Now nothing can happen without air. Immediately, everybody became like pieces of wood. Nobody could move because your joints can't move without the life airs between it, right? It's this prana that In different forms, there's different types of pranas, different types of airs. But without air, you can't move a single limb. You can't blink your eyes. There can be no movement whatsoever anywhere in the universal creation without air, without space. Everyone became totally constipated. Because whatever they ate just got stuck wherever it was. Nobody could pass urine because you drink water and it's just stuck there. Nothing moves. And beyond that, people started suffocating. The universe was about to end. So the devas, they understood exactly what happened, and they were really disturbed, and they went to Brahma, and they approached Brahma. You know, you are the father of all living beings. You're the father of Vayu also, ultimately. Please help us. So Lord Brahma brought Shiva, Agni, Varuna, all of the devas, and they all went to that mountain, and Vayu had little Hanuman in a cave, and when Brahma appeared, the magnanimous Brahma, the first living entity, the secondary creator of all life within the universe, when Vayu saw Brahma, he approached him and offered his full prostrated obeisances before Brahma. And with great respect, he honored the great father of the universe and brought little baby Hanuman in his arms and presented him to Brahmaji. Brahmaji, with his nectarine touch, he stroked little Hanuman's body with his hand. And Hanuman came back to life. Vayu was very happy. So he released all the airs for the universes. And people started moving their eyes and blinking their eyes. They could start moving their arms. They could start to breathe.
they could pass urine again.
Could do everything. Can understand the power of any element of this universe. We are totally dependent on every element. Material creation, everything is so interconnected. One thing goes wrong, and life cannot exist. Such a machine, material nature, created by Krishna. Rama instructed all the devas that this child is going to be the most intimate, loving associate of Sri Ramchandra. And he is going to do your work. What you cannot do, he is going to do. He's going to be the greatest, most powerful warrior for your sake and for the sake of Dharma and for the pleasure and the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So let us all give him the primest benedictions that we can. Indra put a flawless garland from his own neck on Hanuman. And he said, I bless you, Hanuman, that even my thunderbolt will not be able to harm you. Every limb of your body will be stronger than my thunderbolt. And he was getting so many boons from all of the different devas, from Varuna, from Kuvera. They were giving, Vishwakarma gave him the boon that both the devas and the demons have weapons made by me. No weapon made by me will ever be aimed to harm you. Lord Shiva gave him the benediction that you will never be defeated in battle, and you will not be subjected to time or death. He was given boons by Yamaraj that my rod of chastisement will never be able to touch you, and you will be out of my control in form of death. And he was given the boons to be very powerful. He was given mystic cities. Surya, the sun god, said, I will give you 1/100th of my effulgence. And when you become a little older in age, I will personally instruct you in every form of knowledge, and you will be the most learned person, more learned than even the disciples of Bhrigu Muni. You will be eloquent in speech. You will know every subject, spiritual, material, everything. And you will never be able, no one will ever be able to defeat you in debate. And your words will be sweet like nectar. He was getting boon after boon after boon. And little Hanuman was listening to them. And he was he was becoming really surcharged. Shri Radha Gopinath ki. Should I continue? Thank you. Thank you. Vayu picked up baby Hanuman in his arms and brought him back to Anjana and Keshari Raj and said, here is your son. He is now blessed with the boons of the devas. Lord Brahma was giving him boon after boon after boon. He'd never be defeated, be the greatest devotee of the Lord, live for eternity in the hearts of history, insurmountable in battle. So So when he grew a little older as a small child, Hanuman, knowing he had all these boons and having the tendencies of a monkey, he was extremely restless, playful restless. He wasn't mischievous in a naughty way of hurting anybody. He was just extremely playful. Now, you know, you have been to Vrindavan or other places where monkeys are. Can you imagine if those monkeys had those boons? Well, that's kind of the way Hanuman was. We try to chant our japa and with all the things they do. The yajna, the Brahmins were performing yajnas. It's Treta Yuga. That's the yajna age. It's instead of japa, they're doing yajna. So Hanuman would just jump up and he would take the wooden ladles and spoons and just break them into pieces and throw them. And finished. Yajna's finished. And in the forest, the rishis, they wore tree bark. But wearing tree bark, unless you live in the forest with sages, you don't really know it's a science. They take very, very soft tree bark and make it into their clothing. So, and then, you know, when they would be bathing or whatever, Hanumanji would take their tree bark clothing and just rip it into shreds and throw it into the air. Now they have nothing to wear. They have no ladles to do yajnas. All the ghee is thrown all over the place. All the wood is broken into pieces. They have no clothes. Sometimes they'd go into a river to chant their mantras and Hanuman would pull them by the feet and underwater. So he was doing much mischief. Very playful. He didn't want to hurt anybody. He never hurt anybody. He never caused any physical injuries. He was just playful. And the rishis would tell him, don't do this. But, you know, little boy, what are you going to do against me? I have all these boons. He also got a boon, I think it was from Brahma, that he couldn't be cursed. So he was really infallible. So they went and told Anjana and Keshari Raj, and they say, he's the same way at home. So with the permission of Anjana and Keshari Raj, they gave not exactly a curse. It was like a blessing. But they pronounced with their mantras that Hanuman, he would not remember that he had any of the boons or powers he had unless someone began to speak the glories of his powers. So instantly he forgot everything. And then he became very respectful. And he would bring grains to the Brahmins, and bring tea, carefully wash their bark, tree bark clothing. And everything was very nice. And he received so many blessings for giving so much pleasure and so much nice savor to the sages. Now, years later, of course, we know Hanuman. He studied under Surya. Every day, from the time the sun rose in the eastern horizon to the time the sun set in the western horizon, Hanuman would follow the sun and Suryadev the whole while would instruct him on grammar, on logic, on philosophy, on debate, on poetry, on psychology, on history. Surya knows a lot because he sees everything. And he's been around a long time. So Hanuman, every word he spoke was in pristine, eloquent Sanskrit poetry. He didn't speak, he sang. And everything was so charming. He was so gentle. He was so respectful, so humble, that literally he could conquer almost anyone just by his sweet speech. And he knew all the scriptures, not only by memory, but with full realization. And with such compassion, he could present it in such a way that would transform anyone's hearts. And at the same time, he had supernatural powers. So Ram asked, and Agastya Muni was explaining, that Hanuman lived, and because Sugriva was the son of Surya, the Amsa, when Hanuman asked, "Can I give you dakshina? For so long you've taught me everything about knowledge and academics and scripture." Surya said, "Always be a friend at the side of my son." I mean, Sugriva. So Hanuman was loyal. He was faithful. He would rather be banished in exile and have everything taken away than to not be loyal to Sugriva. This was another quality of Hanuman. Absolute loyalty. But since his childhood, he never knew he had powers because nobody ever reminded him. So he was living like a regular vanara, very strong, but... And then we read about Ram searching for Sita after Ravana had kidnapped her. Searching, searching, Jatayu informed Ram that it was Ravana who had stolen her, and he had taken her in the southern direction. Rama and Lakshman were searching, weeping through the forest in the southern direction, looking for any hint, any trace, anyone who knew anything. And then there was that huge mountainous asura named Kabanda. He was like a mountain with one eye in his chest. His belly was his mouth, and his chest was an eye. He was just a torso, but he was bigger than a mountain. And he was divine, and he had long arms, and he was just eating elephants and tigers and rhinoceroses like we eat chana. Most people don't eat one chana at a time, actually a handful at a time. That's the way he was eating elephants and tigers and leopards. It's very big. And he was going to eat Ram and Lakshman. But it's a beautiful story. Ultimately, Ram and Lakshman, you know, they defeated him. And then Kabanda said,
burn me and bury me, and then I'll tell you where, how you could find Sita. Because he understood who he was. He was actually a Gandharva in his past life that was cursed into this form. So they made a big hole, and they were going to bury him and burn him or whatever. And just as they were completing the job, Kabanda became a beautiful golden complexion Gandharva on a chariot. And he said that if someone is seriously in distress and needs help, the best person to help him is someone who's in similar distress who needs help. Because they'll feel for you, they'll know what you're going through, and you could become allies and help each other. So there is someone, you have been exiled from your kingdom, and you have lost your wife. There is a monkey from the Vanara race named Sugriva, who has been exiled from his kingdom and has lost his wife to his enemy. Go and make allies with him. And he has a minister named Hanuman. Go and make your allies with him. And he, with all his hordes and hordes and hordes of monkey soldiers under his command, if you help him to conquer Bali, his brother, he will help you find Sita. I'm sure of it. He's living at a lake called Pampa. And he gave him directions. And then as Kabanda in his Gandharva form was going back to his abode, Lord Ram said, "Now you go back to your abode. Thank you for your help." Kabanda in the sky, his last words were, "Make allies with Sugriva." So Ramchandra, Lakshman, they went to Pampa Sarovar, beautiful lake. In those days it was very large also, right in the foot of Rishyamukha Mountain. There he met Shabari, the simple lady who was living in a little thatched hut or a cave. And she greeted Ram with great love and devotion and fed him those nice fruits. And then with Ram's permission, she ignited by her own mystic powers, fire in her body, and her original spiritual form manifested, and she went back to Godhead. So Ram started walking along the edge of the Pampa Sarovar with Lakshman. And he saw a peahen dancing with a peacock. And he remembered how he would have beautiful leelas with Sita like that. He began to cry. He saw some red fruits and he thought of Sita's beautiful lips. He saw some lotus flowers in Pampa Sarovar. He remembered Sita's eyes. He saw white swans swimming in the Pampa Sarovar, and he remembered Sita's white complexion. He saw a male and female deer playing, and he remembered himself playing with Sita like those deers. Everything he was seeing was reminding him of Sita. He began to cry very loudly in separation from Sita. And he cried out to Lakshman, where is my Sita? We have to find Sita. He was crying. And Lakshman said, we will find. Meanwhile, Sugriva was on the top of Rishyamukha Mountain, and he heard this loud crying. And he looked down to see what it was. Came out of his cave, and he saw Ram and Lakshman. So he became very afraid. He called his five chief ministers, one was Hanuman, and said, "I see there there are two very powerful looking princes. They must be sent by Bali to come to kill me. Because every king is afraid of enemies, and every king wants to exterminate all possibility of any adversary. So surely he has sent these princes to come to kill me. So these monkeys, they jumped from one mountain to another mountain and came to a place where from high above they could look down. Hanumanji said to Sugriva, "Actually, let us study the way they move, the way they talk, the way they look at things, what their gestures are. And we will be able to surmise what their motivation is." This is Hanuman's wisdom. He could just look at someone and know everything about what their motivation is. He said, "They may be friends who have come to make allies with us." Sugriva said, "No, we cannot take a chance. If they become our friends and they're actually Bali's spies, then we're even more vulnerable to the trouble they could make." Hanuman said, "I don't think so. Something in my heart is telling me that they have come to be our friends." Sugriva, "that you go down in disguise and see everything for yourself." So Hanuman disguised himself by his mystic powers, because he also, as a wandering mendicant Brahmin, and he came down to Pampa Sarovar, approached Ram and Lakshman very respectfully, and asked, "Can you tell me why you are here? Who you are?" As he was speaking, looking at Ram and Lakshman, the beauty of Ram's form was melting Hanumanji's heart. It was uncontrollable. Because Hanuman was a great devotee. And even though he didn't know who Ram was, the love of his heart for Sri Ram was expanding and growing in such a way that Hanuman was intoxicated in ecstasy. And before Ram and Lakshman even said anything, Hanuman said, "Actually, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm Hanuman. I'm the messenger of Sugriva, and I've come to find out who you are." But Hanuman could realize that this was God himself. Hanuman understood that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in his heart of hearts, he surrendered. And Ram said, "Oh, you are the minister of Sugriva? That's just who we're looking for." And then Lakshman told the whole story of Ram, in essence. How he was the prince of Ayodhya, and due to the cunning behavior of Kaikeyi, he was exiled into the forest. And how Ravana had stole Sita, and how they met Kabanda, and he had instructed them to make allies with Sugriva to find Sita. Hanumanji, he said, I will bring you instantly to Sugriva. And then he assumed his original form as Hanuman. And he said, "Please get on my shoulders and I will take you there within a moment." So he put Lakshman on one shoulder and
Rama on the other shoulder, and with one jump, he was standing before Sugriva at the top of the mountain. Then he put Ram down, and he put Lakshman down, and introduced them to Sugriva. And they both told each other their problems. Sugriva told the story of how he was exiled from Bali. His wife was captive of Bali. And Ram, he held Sugriva by the hand and said, "We are now allies. Let us vow to be faithful to each other, to help each other in our times of need." And then Ramchandra embraced Sugriva. And just by seeing Ram, Sugriva's eternal love, because he's also a very great Vaishnava, his eternal love awakened within his heart. And when he saw Ram embracing Sugriva and vowing to be allies, to help each other, at that moment, Hanumanji started a sacred fire to consecrate their relationship. And they sat around that fire. And just as we vow at a sacred fire, they vowed faithfulness to each other. At that time, the monsoons were just beginning. Well, actually, before that, Ram did away with Bali. That's a long story. First he threw Dundubi a long distance just to show Bali his strength. And then he shot his arrow through those seven tall trees. And finally Sugriva said, "Yes, I have faith that you could fight against Bali." So by Ram's mercy, Bali was sent back to Godhead. And Sugriva was given the throne and the rule over all the Vanara dynasty. Millions of gigantic monkeys. Then the monsoons came. And they understood it would be impossible to search for Sita during the rains. So in Kishkinda, Ram chose a cave named Prashravana, where he remained for the 4 months of the rainy season. Meanwhile, Lakshman coronated Sugriva as king, and during the monsoons, Sugriva was really enjoying being a king, because there really was not too much else they could do during the monsoon rainy season. It's like in the olden days, sannyasis would just stay in one place and perform tapasya during Chaturmasya. Well, kings, they would just stay in one place and enjoy. So when the monsoons were ending, Sugriva was just intoxicated with all sorts of pleasures. And he forgot all about his alliance with Ram. But a few days passed, and Ram told Lakshman, he said, "Of all types of vile activities, of all disgraceful behavior, the worst is to be ungrateful. Of all graceful behavior, there is nothing worse than ingratitude. I did so much for Sugriva. I cleared away all his obstacles. I put him in his place today. And now he's forgotten. He's forgotten my needs. He's so consumed by his sense enjoyment. You should go and you should teach him a good lesson." Now Lakshman, seeing Ram's anger, he became very angry. He said, "On this very day with my arrows, I will send him to the house of death." Ram said, "Don't do that."
just go there and convince him to be grateful and do the right thing. If he doesn't do that, then you can do. So as Lakshman was coming down, Hanuman, so wise, so sensitive, always thinking about the will of the Lord, Hanuman saw that the rain stopped, and immediately he went to Sugriva, and he said, "You gave your word to Ram to be his ally, to find Sita, right after the rain season ended. The rain season ended. We have to call all our troops together and do it." And Sugriva just woke up from his intoxicated delusion and said, "Yes, yes, we have to do that." Hanuman saved Sugriva's life from Lakshman, Balaram. We saw what he did to the Yamuna with his arrows. So, when Lakshman approached, Angada came to greet him, Hanuman came to greet him. They brought him to Sugriva. Sugriva had already started mobilizing his forces. They were all coming. He said, let us go to Ram and make our final plans. So they took them to Ram's cave. And there, Sugriva vowed that with every last monkey we have, we're going to send them, we're going to find Sita. He was a very powerful ruler. He divided all of his millions of soldiers into four groups, one going north, west, east, and south. And he had Angada heading the party going south, because that's where they thought Ravana went. And he particularly told Hanuman, "You go with Angada, because if anyone is going to find Sita, I believe it's going to be you. Because your power, your devotion, your determination, your wisdom is unparalleled." And then Sugriva ordered all of them, "I give you 1 month to find Sita. And anyone who is not back here, within 1 month, if you're 1 day late from 1 month, I will kill you all. Anyone who's not back is dead. Now you go." He wanted them to take this order very seriously. Ram turned to Hanuman. He said, "I believe, by your devotion, by your love, that you will find Sita." And gave him a ring with his own name on it. And said, "When you find her, you give her this ring, and she will know that I have sent you." Hanuman put that ring to his head in great reverence, then offered his dandavat pranams, bowing down at the lotus feet of Sri Ram, and with tears of affection in his eyes, he stood up and began to search. They searched everywhere without any clues. Ultimately, they got a good lead from Sampati, the brother of Jatayu, who had really good vision, and he could actually see Sri Lanka. And he could see Sita there. And he told them, "That is where she is. That is where Ravana's kingdom is." But it was 800 miles of ocean. How to get there? So each of the different monkeys was expressing their own powers and their own strength. One said, "I could jump one yojana.
Another said, I could jump 2 yojanas. Another said, I could jump 3 yojanas, but that's my capacity. Angada, the son of Bali, who Bali, when he was dying, entrusted under the care of Ram and Sugriva. Angada said, I could jump 8, but I won't be able to jump back. They said, no, no, you are our commander, you should not go. And then there was silence, because there was nobody who could make it. It was at that moment that Jambavan spoke. Jambavan, he said, Hanuman, when you were a little boy, you went to eat the sun. And you were hit by Indra's thunderbolt. And after that, by the power of your father Vayu, Brahma came down and you got all these boons. You could do anything. But then because you became so mischievous, the great rishis, they gave a different kind of boon that you would forget unless somebody chanted your glories. Hanuman, when I was young, I could circumambulate the world without any problem. But now I'm an old man, I can't do it. But Hanuman, for you to jump over this ocean is nothing. And then he started extolling beautifully the powers of Hanuman. And when Hanuman heard it, as far as we understand, it was the first time he was reminded since he got the curse. He said, yes! See what I will do. And he expanded himself to be 50 times his size. Then he climbed Mount Mahendra and roared. And he called out to Angada and to the other and Jambavan. And he said, I will jump right now to Sri Lanka. I will annihilate the entire Rakshasa dynasty. I will kill Ravana. I will exterminate every one of his soldiers, his entire armies, and I will bring Sita back. Just tell me and I will do it now. And Angada said, all you were asked to do is give Sita a message. Just give her the message and come back and tell us what happened. And Hanuman folded palms. He chanted the name of Ram with pure love and devotion in his heart, completely surrendering unto Lord Rama's instruction, feeling totally empowered by Ram's mercy, and he jumped. And when he jumped, the whole mountain began to go into the earth. And the pressure started forcing snakes from underground to come out, to start squirting out. And lions and tigers were coming out and screaming because they didn't know what was happening. The whole mountain was shaking. And as he flew away, the velocity of his wind, it was like the leaves and the flowers started following with him from the whole mountain. And this way, he leaped across the Indian Ocean to Sri Lanka. On his way, the Mount Mahendra, divine mountain that was struck down by Indra long ago, was under the ocean, mountain of gold, actually came up for the first time in honor of Hanuman to give him a resting place. Because he had jumped and it had already been a long way. And the mountain came form in his personified form and said, please rest for some time in your service to Ram. Hanuman was determined. He offered respects, touched the mountain, said, until I fulfill the mission of my Lord, I have no time to rest. And he carried on, and out from the ocean came Surasa. She was the mother of the Nagas. And she told Hanuman that I have been given a benediction by Brahma, that no one can pass me without being eaten by me. So she opened her mouth to eat Hanuman. But Hanuman expanded his size. And she expanded her mouth. And he expanded his size. And she expanded her mouth. It was yojanas and yojanas. It was, she had a big mouth. And Hanuman just kept growing bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And her mouth was going bigger, bigger, bigger. And then Hanuman became the size of a thumb instantly. And her mouth was already enormous. Yojanas wide. And he became a little thumb. And he walked in quite a ways. And then he came out. He said, the benediction has been fulfilled. You ate me. And then Saras came to her normal size again, and she, with great love and devotion, she said, Hanuman, you are very intelligent. I was testing you. The gods have sent me to test you. I bless you. May you be successful in the service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ram. And then after offering his respects to Surasa, he continued on. Suddenly, he was in the middle of the air. He couldn't move. What's happening? Let's go back to Surasa. It's a very good lesson. Trinadapi Sunichena. Hanuman conquered her by taking a very small position. When one humbles oneself to take a very small position, one can access such power of God that one can overcome the most gigantic obstacles. Because false pride is one of the greatest impediments in one's spiritual life. Actually, bhakti is trying to rescue Sita, who is Bhakti Devi, from Ravana, from the greed and the lust of Maya. We're trying to rescue Sita from the our own innate devotion, from the captivity of the Ravana, of the exploitative tendencies, selfishness, egoism. So there will be many obstacles. But false pride is the greatest obstacle. And Hanuman showed in this situation how taking a very humble position, feeling oneself very insignificant, one can easily overcome the obstacles of material energy of Maya in order to find Sita. Rescue the love of God within our hearts. As he was flying, not flying, but in the air jumping, suddenly he couldn't move. He was just stuck in the air. Nothing moved. Then he looked down and he saw there was a Rakshasi named Simika. And Simika, she had the mystic power where she could grab a person's shadow and capture them through that process and then eat them. So Hanuman confronted her and she opened her mouth to devour Hanuman, and she also had a very big mouth. She was really a Rakshasi. She swallowed Hanuman. And Hanuman, again, took a small form and just went down her throat, went down her tongue, went down her throat, went into her body, and then hard like a diamond, he took his claws and started ripping her organs, and then went right to her heart and ripped it to shreds. And Sumika opened her mouth and screamed and died, and Hanuman came out of her mouth and watched her fall into the ocean. Hanuman ji ki. And he continued on his journey. And there he saw Sri Lanka, magnificent island with the Trikuta mountain. And on the top of the mountain was actually Sri Lanka, the city. Practically everything was made out of pure gold. Just yesterday I was listening to a lecture of Srila Prabhupada. And he told me, he told on the tape, when... It's actually nice to think that way when you're listening to Prabhupada's tapes that he's talking to you. Because it is a very personal thing. He is talking to us. So he told me, and if you listen, he'll tell you. And describes there that Ravana wanted to build a city out of pure gold, so he sent his brother Kumbhakarna to get the gold. And Kumbhakarna was so powerful, along with Ravana, that he found massive gold mines in Brazil. And Kumbhakarna built an underground tunnel from Sri Lanka to Brazil to bring all the gold. Hare Krishna. Now, you may think this is impossible. But if mere Kali Yuga humans can build like the Holland Tunnel and under the Sea of New York, then what's the problem for Ravana and Kumbhakarna to do this? It's very possible. It's an easy thing, actually. So, Hanuman saw this spectacular city, and he landed. And he was greeted by Lankini, who was the goddess of Sri Lanka, the presiding deity. And when she saw Hanumanji approaching, Hanuman took a smaller size already. He wasn't 50 times bigger. She said, "You cannot come. Who are you? You are a monkey. You cannot come in here." Hanuman said, I want to go in." And she started blasting him, chastising him. "This is the city of Ravana. This is the city of the Rakshasas. You cannot, without my blessings, without my consent, you cannot enter." And she started threatening to kill Hanuman, to punish Hanuman. So Hanuman, he didn't like to do these things, but he was, for Ram, he would do anything. He slapped her in the face. He could have done a lot worse. But because she was a Mataji, he just slapped her in the face. But she was demoniac in that sense. She was an obstacle. And she fell to the ground. And then she got up and she became ecstatic. She said, "This is very good." She said, "I was given the benediction that nobody would ever have the power to come by me. But I was told that someday someone's going to come and slap you and you're going to fall down. And when that day comes, you should know that that person is going to go into Sri Lanka and the entire Rakshaksha dynasty is going to be destroyed." So she blessed Hanuman. "Now you go in and perform your mission. You have all my blessings."
And Hanumanji took a very small form, about the size of a cat, because he wanted to investigate everything about Sri Lanka, because he assumed that a war would soon come. Hanuman was always eager to serve with his heart, with his soul, with his life. He's the very personification of bhakti. No obstacle could stand before him. Not because of his strength, but because of his love. Now it's very late. We'd like to continue, but I think some prasad is waiting for all of you. When you look at the full moon tonight, remember Balaramji is at this moment dancing with gopis. And Hanuman is coming into the world to show the universe forever what is the power of pure devotional service, the power of bhakti. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Prabhupada also crossed oceans and overcame all unbelievable obstacles to rescue Sita, to awaken bhakti within our hearts. And as Ram said, there is no more disgraceful quality than to be ungrateful. Let us be grateful to Srila Prabhupada for what he has given us. And let us assist him in his mission. And let us be grateful to everyone who has ever helped us in our life. And in this spirit, let us share gift of pure bhakti, and together flood the world with the holy name. So it's, we have 5 minutes for kirtan. According to the law, we have to end by 10. Would you like to have 5-minute kirtan? Yeah. I'll only do it if everyone promises to dance like Hanuman. Govinda, you will do? Shikshastikam Prabhu? Gurgopal Prabhu? Nityananda Prabhu? Radharaman Prabhu? Kirti Damataji?